I am going to do a series of talks starting today, and it's probably going to take me as often as I get to teach, probably a year to get through it. And I'm calling the whole shebang Christianity and Cultural Values. And what I want to do in this talk is basically five topics, and they are: first one that we're going to start on this morning, what were the cultural values of Palestine in both Old Testament and New Testament times? And each of these hopefully flow one from the other. What kind of a person was Jesus? What was he like as a human being? How would we characterize his personality? How was he regarded by those who came in contact with him? Number three, understanding Jesus' and other New Testament writers' teaching in light of the culture. Number four, how has Jesus' ideas and other values from the Bible influenced Western civilization and American culture? The influence is still enormous, and there's a huge apologetic there. Number five, how have those ideas influenced American political thought? So it's going to be very ambitious. And what I am going to do is I am going to let each one of these wander as long as they take. Normally when I try to talk, I try to sum it up. Let's get to it. And if this takes a while, then it's going to take a while. I mean, I can see this going probably 10, maybe more talks. So, okay. Next one. Why am I doing this? Okay, the first reason is I think all of this is it affects our relationship with God. If we understand the history of the Bible, we understand how these things all fit together, there's apologetic value. It helps our understanding of the Bible. It gives us new tools to witness. The main reason I'm doing it, because I think it's cool, and I've been studying it for a long time, and I like studying things that I enjoy. So, and they all tie together. Next. Okay. Cultural values of Palestine in the biblical times. I'm probably going to do more than these, but these are some of the core values that are common not only to Palestine in biblical times, but they're also common to the Middle East now. A lot of this stuff is still really important and driving values. And for any of you who may know about some of those cultures or have experience in those cultures, as we talk about it, please add in your comments, because that would mean a lot to me. Okay. All right. We're going to start out by talking this morning about the honor and shame value. Now, go to the next one. Honor, shame, there it is. Why are understanding the cultural values of biblical times important? What's the big deal? I'm going to try to make this clear to everybody. We can know the history of the Bible. We can understand what happened, when, and how people were influenced. We can have a really excellent couple of translations of the Bible when we try to understand what the Bible says, and all of that is helpful. But if we don't understand the culture of the time, how are we going to understand what the Bible actually says? And I'm going to give you an example here from present times. I would like a volunteer, someone who I can ask questions of. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I just want one person who would let me ask them some questions about our culture. Who was doing it? You've got a smirk. How about if I ask you? All right. Give me your hat. All right. I am now a space alien. Do I look... Thank you.
I can prove it.
Yeah. Shut up. I am now a space alien, and I have been reading this copy of yesterday's Los Angeles Times, and I have some questions for you about this article. Okay? Let me read a paragraph. I am completely mystified. This is called Holiday Shopping Starts Off Strong. armed with store floor plans, stacks of coupons, and money to spend, hordes of shoppers hit the malls early, late, and every moment in between on Black Friday. Most important, they said they were buying more this holiday season than last. It says, armed with store floor plans. Do store floor plans shoot? Can you kill somebody with store floor plans? Then why does it say armed with store floor plans?
It's a saying based on...
What's the saying?
A convention in a certain language.
So I can't take this literally?
No.
Then why does it say it? You're not explaining it very well. Okay, it says armed with store floor plans. Were they like architects? Why would they have store floor plans?
They just wanted to know the layout.
For what purpose?
So they can find the best deal the fastest.
What's a deal?
You pay the least for the best thing.
Why would you want to pay the least? Shouldn't you just pay whatever it's worth?
Sometimes there's a variation, so you find the best price for it.
So in your culture, that's a value that you have, to try to pay not so much for something. Is that an important value?
To some people.
Okay. And it says, hordes of shoppers hit the malls early. So they went there just to pound their fists on the side of the building?
Yeah, this is four malls.
This is really confusing. Hordes of shoppers hit the malls early, late, and every moment. Is this some kind of ritual that they do? They go pound on the building?
In a sense, yeah.
What does it mean?
Doesn't mean anything.
You're not explaining this very well. On Black Friday. Black Friday. Does everyone wear black on Black Friday? What does it mean, Black Friday?
It means there's lots of sales and you get to buy things for cheap.
Back to that.
Yes.
Back to that. So purchasing things is important.
Yes.
Did you know Black Friday?
What is Black Friday?
Oh, it's supposed to be the time when the stores are back in the red or the red.
What does being in the red mean?
That they're not making a profit.
Why is profit important?
That keeps you busy.
Well, if they didn't make a profit, wouldn't people just go and give them money and help them out?
You are an awfully dumb alien.
Yes, well. And you guys aren't explaining your culture very well. Okay, what's the point of this? Thank you. What are we learning when we read this? There is so much that's unsaid in any article you pick up. There's values, there's idioms, there's a whole bunch of stuff in here that we understand it because we live in the culture. 95% of what you need to know to understand this article is unspoken. We read it, we don't even think about it. Obviously, we're in an economics-driven culture, so buying things for cheap is a really important value. But it doesn't explain that in this article. Okay? Mark.
It's kind of written, now that you made us think about it, poetically. You know, there's a lot of metaphors and
idioms.
And idioms.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't even realize how much there was. You started doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's amazing. There's one, I want to read this one because it's just, if you start looking at it from, does this really make sense? This is great. At the Glendale Galleria and Westfield Century City, frustrated drivers reported circling the parking structures for an hour Friday looking for a spot. Now, what would a space alien think of that? Is that some kind of ritual? You know? Is that like a religious thing? They drive around and for a while and the other thing that you don't see when you it's not in here, if you read it, are these things good or bad? Okay, it says here that, it says in one of the places here that fights broke out at a couple of malls. Well, it just says that, but it doesn't say if that's a good thing or a bad thing. So if somebody 2,000 years from now read this article, they would be scratching their head. They'd be going, is that good? Is that bad? Are they trying to say that fights are a good thing or a bad thing? So my point is, so much of what we know about this article is we know it because we live in the culture and we understand the context. So what does that mean about when we read the Bible? Should we take it literally? Well, maybe there's idioms in the Bible. Should we understand the culture that the Bible was in? Absolutely. Because I've come to realize that we cannot really understand what the Bible says unless we understand what the values of the culture were, just like we no one 2,000 years from now could understand this culture from this article or even the whole newspaper unless they understood the values of our culture. Okay? Everybody, does that make sense? Yeah, John.
Wouldn't it maybe be better phrased that you could understand a number of passages better by knowing the culture? Because I believe the message of salvation is transcultural and clear outside of any culture.
Yes.
It does not depend on any culture. And who Jesus is, how you're saved, etc., the basics. But there are various passages that, if you know the cultural background and idioms on more peripheral type issues, those can really help.
But maybe there's nuances about the gospel message, the message of salvation, that we can't understand unless we understand the culture.
Maybe smaller nuances, but not the basics.
Sure. Some of it's, I mean, this whole idea is going to apply more to some parts of the Bible and less to others.
I'm following you, I know what you're saying. But I'm thinking some things don't change. I'm assuming because 2,000 years ago we had fights breaking out, probably wasn't here. It still probably won't be 2,000 years ago we'll be involved in anger.
But my point is there's a huge assumption behind that. Whether it's true or not, or whether it transcends different times, you're assuming that fights are bad. The article assumes that the reader knows that fights are bad. It doesn't say these fights were bad. That's my point. Scott?
Romans showed up a lot. It's okay. A gladiator fight. People still go to the Shriner Auditorium to see people fight. So you're going from your point of view again, yeah.
Okay. All right, I want to give you an example from the Bible. Go to the verse. Matthew 13:41-42. The Son of Man will send out His angels, and they will weed out of His kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. They will throw them into the fiery furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, it's very clear from that passage that the place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, which sounds like a very horrible place to be, is the fiery furnace, which is hell. Correct? Matthew 22:12-13, Friend, he asked, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? The man was speechless. Then the king told the attendants, tie him hand and foot and throw him outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, is weeping and gnashing of teeth where this guy's going? Is the king throwing this guy into hell? Well, this is a metaphor. Weeping and gnashing of teeth is actually a metaphor for being dishonored. Now, if he is out on the street and out of the wedding party and was thrown out, it means he was dishonored. So, go back to the other verse. Part of being in hell is being dishonored. And here's a good example of if you don't understand the idiom, if you don't understand the culture, then you're going to miss this. You're just going to think it's a literal place where you're weeping and gnashing of teeth, which it is, but it also means being dishonored. Okay? All right. Thank you. I want to set the stage before I go into the meaning of honor and shame of what it would have been like to live in first century Palestine. Okay? The weather there is about the same as it is here. I remember from my eighth grade geography class, we live in a Mediterranean climate because the whole Mediterranean Sea is in a Mediterranean climate. So the weather, the geography is similar. Hot summers, not too much rain, sort of warm in the winters. 90% of the people who lived in first century Palestine, time of Jesus, it was a very rural setting. So you did not live in a city, you were probably a peasant farmer. 2 to 4%, which is between 1 out of 50 and 1 out of 25 people, would have been literate. So you probably did not read or write. Life expectancy at birth. Anybody want to guess?
30.
20. Okay, that's at birth. If you made it to your teenage years, then it's up to about 40. Okay. Population. This is really interesting. Anybody want to guess what the population of Jerusalem was around the time of Jesus?
20,000.
Pretty close. 35,000. What was the population of Nazareth? 200. Good job, Al. About 200 people. We're talking really, really, really small towns. What's going to happen in a town if you live in a town with 200 people? You're going to know every single person and what they're doing and what they shouldn't be doing. Okay. 1 to 3% of the people, which is the wealthy people, owned about 2/3 of the land. So if you're a peasant farmer, you probably have a subsistence plot of land that you're working, that you're trying very hard to keep going, and you're working very hard not to go into debt so that you will lose it. Probably over 50% of families were broken. If you think about what the birth age was, most families are going to have one or both parents die by the time the children reach 5 or 6. It was also, and this is one thing that you need to understand, it was not a peaceful culture. It was violent and it was combative. Of the 79 Roman emperors, 31 were murdered, 6 committed suicide, and 4 were deposed by force. That adds up to 41 out of 79, which is more than 50%. Imagine if more than 50% of our presidents were murdered or committed suicide or were deposed by force. That would give you an idea of sort of what the life and times were like. All right, let's talk about the first value, honor and shame. Anybody want to say what they think honor and shame means? Al?
I think if you go to Saudi Arabia, probably you have the same thing that you had 2,000 years ago. You know, you have slavery, they still believe in witches, they stone adulteresses, all that stuff still going on. You know, this was where the Bible was born. So that's part of their culture there.
Yeah, but I studied this, because obviously it is a lot of the shame culture still exists in a lot of the Arab world. And the shame had to do with yours and your family's honor. And so, you know, if you went out and you stole something, obviously, you know, it wouldn't be bad unless you got caught. Because if you got caught, it would bring shame to your thing. Or the classic example I used when I was talking to you in the Middle East is saying, you know, it's here in America, you know, I have to drive late at night and strange places or whatever. And you'd be sitting there and you can see miles around, you know, the intersection in the middle of thing in Nebraska, and I'm sitting in a red light waiting for it to turn green, you know. Why am I sitting here waiting? I could go through, there's nobody around, nobody can see me, I can see miles around, there's no headlights, there's no cars, but I sit there. Why? Because it's honor, it's the right thing to do, and I know that the Lord's watching me, and it's the right thing to do. Whereas in the shame culture, they have no problem just blasting through there. It wouldn't burn their consciences at all because nobody sees them. I'm not going to see these. I'm not going to bring any.
That's right.
And so we live in an honor society where we do the right thing because it is the right thing to do in the rule of law. For other ones, it's a matter of bringing shame to you and your family. And of course, that makes a whole different list of things that, you know, that people, you know, would do and not do.
Yeah, and you're jumping the gun, but I'll go there because you're making a great point. A culture that is based on honor means that you are getting your value that you see of yourself. The value that you hold for yourself is because everyone else thinks you're a good person. And so you do things or don't do things because they are an honorable thing to do, because other people approve of them or disapprove of them. A good example, I heard this, if someone goes into the store and buys 2 pounds of rice, and the guy's measuring out 2 pounds, and let's say I'm buying the rice, and he's measuring out the 2 pounds, and I start having a conversation with Mel over here while this guy's measuring out the rice, if he only gives me a pound of rice, and I turn and take the rice and pay for 2 pounds, he feels no guilt for giving me 1 pound of rice. It's my fault because I didn't look. And he can feel good about it because I didn't notice it. Because there's no dishonor in something you don't see. So, it's external. You do things because everybody else approves them or disapproves of them. So if you're by yourself, there's no compunction to do, quote, the right thing, because there is no right thing, because the right thing is what everybody says is right. So if they can't see it, you can do it. So that's one of the, and this is one of the, you know, it's way far ahead, but that's one of the things that Jesus said that is different, and that is that it's what's in our heart that matters. So stealing that pound of rice is wrong because God sees it. It's wrong because it's wrong in and of itself as a value. It's not wrong because somebody sees it. So it's internal versus external. Does that make sense? Ruth?
No, I can totally... It hits home. This all hits home because, you know, I'm very close to Jewish culture, and I lived through this whole honor shame all my life. And it's such a huge thing. It happens today, where everything that happens in the home stays in the home. And anything that, if it leaks out, it is a huge shame. How dare you leave any type of secret out, and allegiance goes straight to the family. Forget friends. And whatever you do, you have to make sure you do it not for yourself, but you're doing it for your family and how people think of you. So reputation is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you do outside in the foreigner's eye, you better make sure you're on top-notch best behavior. Because if you do anything that's anything shady at all, you're going to feel guilt. That's going to go straight to your family and all your community. Everyone's going to know. So it's like a shame that you make sure you do what you're supposed to do. And father, mother comes first, honoring your father, mother over even your spouse. Father, mother comes first. And family comes first.
And in that milieu, if someone does something shameful, does it shame everyone in the family?
It does. So all respect towards the family, whatever you do. The American mentality is, I can do whatever I want. I don't care what other people think. It's the total opposite in a Jewish Middle Eastern culture.
Right. Yeah. And that's great, because I'm going to talk about that very phrase. Ted?
I'd also like to comment, in Asian cultures, Japan and China, honor, dishonor is exactly what this lady just described. Probably more so.
Mm-hmm.
Probably universal.
So Jim? Are you saying in that honor and shame are contrasting to each other?
They are related, and I'm going to define them in a few minutes.
Oh, good. I see them as two sides of the same coin.
They are, and I'm going to define them.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's the whole idea about shunning, because in some groups, it's the family that's the most important thing to keep your survival. If you get shunned by your family, you don't survive. You need your family
to
help you through the rough times and things. And so if you shame the family, then you get shunned, and then you get pushed off, and then you're off by yourself. You have to find people to take care of your kids. You know, the whole thing. You don't have the family that can help you harvest or whatever.
That's right. And everyone thinks of you as being shameful.
Right.
Okay. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. John, and then I want to read something.
I take it you would agree that honor is not necessarily based on God's absolutes. For example, in Middle Eastern culture, if a daughter were to have sexual relations before she got married, it would be the duty bound honor of brothers, for example, to go and kill her.
No, you're right.
But if the brother did that,
see,
no problem. You know, so obviously that's a distortion. You know, so sometimes honor is based on the Ten Commandments.
That's right.
Sometimes it's just based on some warp concept.
Well, it's just based on what we would see as sort of a random value that a particular culture holds. That's right. So, see, this is what one of the big switches from in the Bible gave us. It used to be that whatever was right was what your little community said was right. You know, if your little community, when they went into battle and they won the battle and they raped all the women of the other city, that wasn't wrong. No one was even thinking in terms of right and wrong. That's just what you did. That was a value that the culture held. Now here comes the Bible and Jesus says there's things that are right and they're wrong in and of themselves. This is a gigantic switch. Yes, you're right, but most people didn't follow it, and the culture, you know, it's like us as Christians. We have one foot in our Christian culture and one foot in American culture. And many of our values are from the culture rather than from the Bible. And so it was the same with Jews in first century Palestine. I mean, they lived in the culture. Well,
theoretically, there was at least some.
Well, yes, there is.
So it's not that radical to have a hard and fast rule.
For the Jews.
Right.
For the average person. And remember, I'm talking about, when you deal with sociology, you're dealing with very general things that you can always find exceptions for. In history, you want to find, you know, this battle was different from this battle was different from this battle in these ways. When you talk about sociology, you're mixing it all up and you're trying to find a statement that you can say about an entire group of people. Okay. Al?
Yeah, don't forget that Yahweh in the Old Testament tell them, the Jews, go up there and kill and rape and don't leave anybody alive.
There was no.
Not raping, but he says, kill them all, take their land, and that's, you know, that's Canaan, right? So Yahweh was he was right along with them.
Well, if he was God, Al, I would think that he would know if a particular culture needed to be wiped out.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let me read this, because I think it says it better than I can. Another one of the things that we didn't get from that newspaper paper article, we were talking about economics and getting a good deal on purchasing something as being a value in this culture. Another thing that someone that read that 2,000 years from now could not get, or would have to really think about it and try to figure it out, is what is the relative importance of different values in this culture? And the reason I'm leading with honor and shame is because this was the most important value. Everything else flows from this value. Unlike our Western guilt-oriented society, in the Mediterranean society of the first century, the pivotal social value was honor. Concern for honor permeates every aspect of public life in the Mediterranean world. Honor is the fundamental value. It is the core, the heart, the soul. Philo speaks of, quote, wealth, fame, official posts, honors, and everything of that sort with which the majority of mankind are busy. He complains that fame and honor are a most precarious possession, tossed about on the reckless tempers of flighty words of careless men. Notice Romans 12:10, where Paul admonishes Jesus group members to outdo one another in showing honor, thereby acknowledging the value placed on honor among Jesus groups as well. Simply stated, honor is public reputation. It is name or place. It is one's, and this is the one sentence that sums it up. It is one's status or standing in the community together with the public recognition of it. Public recognition is all important. To claim honor that is not publicly recognized is to play the fool. To grasp more honor than public will allow is to be a greedy thief. To hang on to what honor one has is essential to life itself. Let me read that again. To hang on to what honor one has is essential to life itself. What are the values, what values do we have in this culture that are that important? If I'm back to my space alien cap, and I said, what is the most important value in your culture, could you sum it up in a word or a sentence? What drives us?
I think your word and integrity is pretty strong in America.
Anybody else? Mark?
Freedom. People want to be able to do what they want to be without any comments.
Okay.
So share something in creating a thing called the Constitution that was sort of expressed by.
Mark?
Generally, you hear the word success. And the way I always interpret that is, you know, are you making the right amount of money and do you have the right possessions? So that's very important.
Right. So success is measured monetarily. Dan?
Value is a human being.
And how is that value judged?
And as a human being, what you are, what you're supposed to be.
How would the average person in 21st century America value his worth or the worth of another?
The way that you conduct yourself, the way that the world sees you.
And how does the how does the world define how they see you? All right, James.
I think being conscious.
Conscious?
Yeah.
Having a conscience, you mean?
It's being consciously aware. You don't need to be a Christian to write it for long, but at the same time, you know, having a conviction of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a mental attitude.
Okay, Gordon.
Reputation can bring honor or shame, depending on your behavior. What you either accomplish or not accomplish, and what is the integrity of what you're trying to do.
And what in America brings you a higher reputation?
Experience.
Yeah.
I think if we're looking at a big sociological group, we probably have to say that material possessions are on the top of that list. As we get subcultures that are becoming larger, I think that is changing.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of Western society in general, I think it's stuff.
And what allows us to get stuff?
Money.
Gloria?
It's like within the first minute of meeting somebody, they say, so what do you do?
Yes.
What's your occupation?
Especially among men.
Yeah. I mean, if you are a garbage collector, it's one thing. If you're a doctor, it's another thing.
That's right. And what does that imply?
Garbage collector makes more
sense. Yeah. Okay. Jackie?
The term used to give back. Something back.
Uh-huh. Yes. So generosity. Generosity.
Participation.
Okay.
In other words, you feel others, either the people around you or your circumstances have given a lot to you, your fortune in some way, and you want to give something back to responsible group, your town, or.
Mm-hmm. Dan?
It's actually what the world perceives, or our culture, what we approve of. That's what we have. 70% of the people say so. So the more people approve what you do, that's what makes you a human being that's supposed to be honored.
Well, that's the honor value, which is still a huge part of this culture. But it's not as important in this culture as it was then. I think, Mara.
I don't think that I look more negatively at the culture here. Thank God there are Christians, but I think there's no shame anymore.
Well, I that's why I'm saying it's not the value that it used to be. I think whether you like it or not, good or bad, it just is that probably economics, money, is what drives our status. It's what, Mark, freedom allows us to make money and try to become wealthy. Hang on a second, Al. So sociologists will tell us that it's economics that drive this culture. So as important as you can see the culture holds economics, that's how strongly the Mediterranean culture held to the honor-shame value. It was everything. It was life itself. Dave?
Yeah, I think different answers, and we've determined that obviously that each generation has had different values. You know, the great generation, when they fought World War II, you know, patriotism and supporting the community in America was their top. You know, the baby boomers was definitely more materialism, you know, your house, your car, my wife would whisper my ears, but of course it's your car, your baby boomers.
Right.
You know, you're defined by what type of car you drove, you know. And I think that Generation X, it has been more of the freedom, you know, what kind of music you have, your social network, how many friends you have on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, MySpace, that type of stuff. And so each one of these generations, I think, you know, has an overriding, you know, of values of what they would think of that. And that's why we're seeing this change, is because as each generation comes down, they refine it a little bit. It's a little bit different, you know, on what their top priority.
Al?
Yeah, I think it's always been a matter of survival. I mean, before we had the Bible, we had, when people got together in a group, they had to make up some morals and laws and regulations that they can do this, can do that. So it's always been that, a matter of survival. It is now. If you, if you're not a good person, you're not going to have a good life. So I think it's all a matter of survival.
You're right. I mean, cultures, societies develop rules, and sometimes those rules are sort of random based on circumstances. Hopefully, one of the things the Bible instituted was basing these societies on values that are external to us, that have to do with God. Ruth?
Also, we have to consider that back then Jewish culture had a patriarchal family. The man was in charge. And maybe in the 1940s, 1950s, it's still a patriarchal family. But as the time goes on, it becomes matriarchal and democratic, where two people make decisions equally.
Right.
That makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to that, probably not this week, but because that's a huge value. Valerie?
I think in our culture, political correctness changes what used to be considered shameful things.
Yes.
So they're politically correct. They're okay. And if you're a Christian, political correctness doesn't make it with you, but it's still the prevailing atmosphere, and it affects the media. I mean, if we watch Turner Classic Movies quite a bit, you really see glimpses of the past. It's like going time travel. And you can see the language, you can see the humor. Everything was a lot cleaner. I mean, there's things now, they'll show something with four-letter words at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, your kids are exposed to all this stuff. You can be, oh, that's a shame, you know, those kind of words came out.
So is it fair to say then, from what you're saying, that there is a new set of values in this culture?
It's not refining, it's degrading.
Yes. Ted?
Well, I think certain values are almost universal. For instance, Jesus said, no greater love hath a man than he lay down his life for his friends. And that would occur if a person was from a Hindu background, a Buddhist background, an atheist background, a Christian background. You know, if we were out here and he saw me going to get run down by a car and he pushed, dragged me out of the way and you got killed, everyone would say, Ross, that's a very honorable thing you did. If we were in Japan, the same thing occurred with one of their bullet trains is going to wipe me out. And if the person saved my life, everyone would tell that person it was very honorable.
actually,
I disagree.
I think there's huge parts of the Muslim world that would not ascribe to that, especially if you were not Muslim or from, if you were a Shia and the other guy was a Sunni, you would not be as concerned with it. And I've been to Japan. One of the very interesting values in that culture is we were walking along and an elderly woman tripped and fell and cut her knee pretty badly. And no one stopped to help. And I was with someone who lived there, and they understood the culture, and they said, it is shameful to help someone in that situation because you're telling them by helping them that they cannot help themselves, and it's an insult. So people will just walk around her as if nothing's going on. Now, to us, that's abhorrent. It's ridiculous. But that's one of the values in that culture. Mara?
Same in India. That's why Mother Teresa, their religion tells you you don't help them if you're going to interfere with their karma.
Right. Yeah.
That,
okay.
I've seen that occur in our country.
Sure.
I was at the music center, and an elderly man was having a hard time walking up the steps, and he fell, and he was had trouble getting up. I went to help pick him up, and he just cursed me out. He was mad because I had done that.
Yes, you insulted him. That's right.
He couldn't get up.
That's right. That's right.
Whoa, okay, Tom.
Okay, I want to get back to something Ruth said, because I actually have it written down almost the same way. How many times have we said to each other, heard from each other, something like this? Do the right thing, no matter what anybody else thinks or says. We're all familiar with that idea in this culture. This is an impossible statement in an honor-shame culture. Okay, now think about it. If how you value yourself, if what you think of yourself and your family is defined by what your little 200-person village thinks of you and your family, that is where you get your self-worth. Like in this culture, we get our self-worth from economics, from how much money we make. Okay? Now, even if you are a Christian and you hold to values that you believe transcend that, it's going to be very difficult, if you believe in this honor-shame idea, to take a hold of those values and say this value is more important than the honor-shame. They're going to be in tension. Okay? So, how would you define, in an honor-shame culture, how do you define what's right?
Thinking here is, how do you accept homosexuality in this scenario?
You cannot accept...
We have laws now, legally they can get married, and I'm not making a value statement here, as far as that... group in society, but how can you even comprehend homosexuality in this whole honor, shame, or the value system we have today?
Well, if homosexuality is seen by the group that you're in as a shameful thing, then it is wrong by definition. If not, then
I'm talking today's society. In America, our culture
right.
gives legal rights for same-sex marriages. So, just throwing that out as a contrast to
yes.
what we're trying to establish as values or think what is right. No more do the right thing. Well, yeah, what is right?
Right.
How do we define what is right?
And my point is, in an honor-shame culture, the definition of what is right is what the society says is right. So to say, go do the right thing no matter what anybody thinks, it's a contradiction. How can you do the right thing if people don't think it's the right thing?
I don't know why this is reminding me, but in the book, the room where it says, I think there's a statement, I forget which verse, where it said that people did what was right in their own eyes. And they kind of know what you're saying. But that's why it stood out that Ruth did. She kind of stumbled off what was right in God's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting that use that same phraseology.
Honor is a group value. As a group, You believe that something is right or wrong because of the shame that it brings upon you if other people don't think it's right. Now, here's where it's interesting. Let's imagine that you believe, imagine for each one of you, that you believe that your self-worth, how you think about yourself, and you may never think about it this way, but this is your process. Your self-worth, how you think about yourself, is how other people perceive you. What if somebody says something nasty about you? What are you going to do? How will it make you feel? It will make you feel less valuable. Less valuable, like you were a millionaire and you lost it all. That much less valuable. So what are you going to do about it? How do you get them back? If I said to you, I don't think you work very hard. I just insulted you. Now, if we're in an honor-shame culture, I just said that to you in front of all these people. What are you going to do? Can you say sticks and stones will break my bones? I've insulted you in front of all of these people. You are now dishonored. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to do that?
Dishonor you.
Very good. And how will you do that?
Find something out.
Or you can insult me right back. All right. So here's the deal with the honor-shame culture. You're constantly fighting because people are always going to be insulting you. Let's say, and it works the other way too. Let's say I think you're a fabulous guy. And I want to give you this gift, okay? This is a gift to you. And I'm giving it to you in front of all of these people. Now, what are you going
to
do?
That's
right. You've got to give something back to me in front of everybody to keep it even. Otherwise, I'm actually shaming you if you don't return it. That's right. So there's all these little subtle things going on all the time, and you constantly have to watch out who's insulting you, who's thinking what. Something happens, you have to get back, you have to equalize it. Imagine having to live like that. Auburn? Yes.
If you give someone, if I receive a Christmas gift from someone, now I'm completely obligated to give them something back. We live like that every single day. We live to not just, we don't even live to look like we are honored. We just live so that way we are not in shame. It's not even about how uplifted we are. It's just about, you know, like she said, the first thing you ask is, what do you do? You know, and all our answers are just to not make us feel bad. Somebody else dies.
Imagine it being about five times as strong as it is in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
Mara?
What's wrong with that? I mean, I think that brings us up. I think it makes us aware, like if you give somebody a present, you know, that it makes them feel like maybe it makes them, you know, go higher than they should about something moral about themselves. I don't see anything wrong with any of that.
I am not trying to make a value judgment here. I am not. All I'm trying to say is my point. My bottom line is, honor shame was the most important value in biblical times. Everything fell from that. So when we read the Bible, we need to keep in mind this value amongst many other values. I've got like about 5 minutes, and I'm going to jump ahead because, John, would you read some of those verses I gave you? I picked some verses out of the Bible sort of at random that talk about honor and shame. Now, with this in mind, what we've been talking about, listen to these verses and see if it changes the way that you hear them.
I know I have the body of a teenager. It's just my eyes that are advanced. Got a small print Bible. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you.
Read the references, too.
Exodus 2012.
One of the Ten Commandments.
I'm not getting older. I refuse to acknowledge. Okay. Psalm 44, 13 through 15. You have made as a reproach to our neighbors the scorn and derision of those around us. You have made as a byword among the nations the people shake their heads at us. My disgrace is before me all day long, and my face is covered with shame.
Okay, now when you read a verse like that, now you understand, when they were shamed, they were, it was like being on your stomach. I mean, that's as low as you can get. That is serious. Go ahead.
Proverbs 19:26. He who robs his father and drives out his mother is a son who brings shame and disgrace. Okay, in Isaiah 43:4. And verse 4 is, since you are precious and honored in my sight, and because I love you, I will give men in exchange for you and people in exchange for your life.
So here's even God talking about honor and shame. One more, John.
Okay, Isaiah 54:4. Do not be afraid. You will not suffer shame. Do not fear disgrace. You will not be humiliated. You will forget the shame of your youth and remember as no more the reproach of your widowhood.
Imagine how uplifting that would have been to receive that promise that you would not be shamed anymore. That would have been like inheriting $10 million. Okay, does anybody have any questions about this? I'm running out of time and I got so much more. Next time we'll talk about more honor, shame, and get into some of the other values.
I was just thinking, one perspective of the honor, shame thing, it kind of matters the importance or power that the person has who, like the insulting or the gift example. If, you know, back in the scientist, somebody was flying big or sitting on the side of the street and said, gosh, you're ugly, you probably, you don't feel like you have to insult.
That's right.
Whatever. You don't have any power. And of course, I'm not saying the person doesn't, but would have been viewed that way?
No, it's really true. I mean, if he was a king and I was a beggar and I had said that to him, he could just blow it off.
Yeah.
And there would be no shame involved. But if we were social equals and I insulted you, you would have to respond. Because your honor, not only your honor, but the honor of your entire family is at stake. If you did not respond, your whole family would be shamed. Everyone here would look worse at you because you didn't have the skill and the courage to stand your ground to me.
Yeah, I think as Christians, we probably should have a different honor-shame value.
Yes.
Or level than non-Christians. Ours should be more biblically based.
Yes.
And it makes it simpler, too.
And
whereas non-believers would be more politically based than whatever's going on in society.
Yeah.
Is that something you were going to talk about later?
Yeah, but okay. But months from now. Ruth?
Honor and shame is way more powerful when you're based in one culture. Whereas in America, there's so many different cultures that it diminishes the power of honor and shame.
That's right. Because there's a bunch of competing value systems. If you lived in a small town of 200 people in Nazareth, everyone is under this. Everyone is subject to this. And that's one of the very interesting things that I want to get to next time is one of the other values that flows from this is how can you be an individual in 21st century American, the way we think of as an individual, how can you be an individual if you're under this? You cannot be. You do not think of yourself as an individual. You think of yourself primarily as a part of a family and a collective. And so this idea of individualism is not really, the way we think about it, does not exist in the Bible. Anyway, that's it. Dave's standing there, which means shut up. Wrap it up. All right. I'm wrapping it up. Let's pray. Jesus, this is so exciting. Thank you, God, that we can study all of these things which give us a better eye for your word to us, that it adds nuances and new meaning to the holy words that you have given us. And ask your blessing on each one of us as we go our way today. And thank you so much that I had an opportunity to talk about this. In Jesus' name, amen.